welcome to the Cake and Eat It podcast. My name is Jody Seeley, along with the fantastic Fawn Abuse. I'm going to give like a different F word to describe you every single time we do an episode. That's just the way it's going to be.
I can't wait. I can't wait till we get to the good ones.
Challenge accepted. We're really excited to have a special guest joining us on an episode this week. Jim Deers is with us. He is all about building community. I think he bleeds community. I really do. He's a speaker, an author, an inspirer, and a doer, and he's an advocate for the power of neighborhoods. Jim Deers, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you again.
I know. I'm so excited. So for people who maybe don't know, we have the opportunity to work together in the community of High River a few years ago now. You came and you spoke to our community and it was so inspiring. And I followed your career maybe too closely since then, but thanks to social media, I can stalk you and it's professional. But you have done some really cool things and it was really great to hear, I guess, your perspective and your background on community when you came to speak to us. And I think, you know, obviously pre-COVID, you got to travel the world to do that and probably find our neighborhoods, if you break them down in wherever country you're in or whatever you're doing, we're all kind of the same with the same needs. It's just a different place.
That's right.
So can you give us a little bit of background? I've alluded to it slightly, but to what you do and some of the cool things you've been a part of?
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief. I'm Canadian. I was born in Burnaby, British Columbia. Really grew up in the Midwest. My parents were very active in the community and in social justice work. So I was an activist from an early age, really active on social justice issues, anti-racism, anti-Vietnam War. And went to college in a small town, and all the students were active, but nobody from the town was. So I thought, how do we connect with them? And I heard about this community organizing, about bringing people together around whatever they cared about, rather than coming in with your own issue. And that sort of stuck in my head. Moved to Seattle out of college, and first thing I did was volunteered as a community organizer for 6 years. And absolutely loved it, working in a low-income community, helping people build a sense of community and helping people realize they could have power by working together as a community. And I learned a ton from the people there. I went on from that to Group Health Cooperative, the largest healthcare cooperative in the United States, helping them to be more of a cooperative and organizing consumer groups all over the cooperative to work for healthcare, but also to work against nuclear weapons as a health issue, senior caucus issues, women's caucus, medical center councils and all the clinics. And then got recruited from that to be director of a Department of Neighborhoods for the city of Seattle. First time a city government had organized people the way the people were organized, had organized its own department the way the people were organized by neighborhood. And so it allowed us to do things in a very different way, to really decentralize the way we did our work, to work across functions, to focus on communities rather than on discrete functions, to focus on the resources of the community rather than just focusing on the needs as a way to really partner with the community. So we started up a neighborhood matching fund where we supported community self-help projects. We provided cash in exchange for the community's equal contribution of volunteer labor. And through that, more than 5,000 projects were accomplished across the city of Seattle. Just, you know, new ball fields and community gardens and murals and oral histories and just all sorts of projects. But the best thing about it was it got people involved. It built a sense of community. We finally gave people a way to get involved other than going to meetings. Went on from that to get people involved in bottom-up planning, where they create plans for their own neighborhoods rather than having a city planner do it to them, and forming little city halls in the neighborhood so that people could do business with government right where they lived, and where we had district councils that pulled all the different associations in the neighborhood together so they could speak with one voice and share resources. So that was exciting. I did that for 14 years, wrote a book about it, and then I started getting invitations to come to other places to share what I'd learned. And now I'm working in 17 different countries, sharing what I've learned with everybody, with government, with grassroots neighborhood associations, with NGOs, with you know, youth groups, senior groups, business groups, everybody. And in the process, I've learned a ton because I, you know, every place has their own stories and their own ways of doing things. So I pick up ideas and then I share those with the next place I go to. So that's been a real treat. And then I took what I was learning also to the University of Washington, where I teach some courses in community development and community organizing, directed a community foundation and a community development corporation to help build affordable housing in a community, but following the community's plan and using the community's resources to get that done. In addition to that, I'm just really active in my own community. It's something I believe in really strong, that if you really care about community, it's not just about the role of the community builder isn't to help other people build community. You also need to be building community for yourself. You can't really do the work unless you're experiencing community. So I'm really active now in my own community of Vashon Island, an island of about 10,000 people just off of Seattle. Sorry, that was a little bit long.
I told you you bleed community. I was certain. But it's just the passion is so exciting about that. And I think, gosh, I don't know, there's probably so many things that I have taken away from the opportunity of hearing you speak and following your work. But probably my most favorite, and I think Fauna can agree, because we made this very much our directive when we did the Our High River work, is that you don't have meetings, you have parties.
Yep.
I'm glad nobody you got wants that one. To go to a meeting. So we made everything a party.
I think you understood that one before we met.
Yeah, you just gave me permission. So I was so grateful that I was simply like, no, this guy, look, he's a bigwig and he said party, not meeting. So yeah. I will be forever grateful for your permission for that.
I feel like Jim, you kind of just dipped your toes in the water there in terms of what you've done. And it's not too much at all. It's just so good to hear. I guess what pops in my head is that from all of that work, is there, you know, are there a couple things that really stand out for you in terms of like where to start or here's what we need to never forget other than it's all the parties, no meetings, all parties. Yeah. Is there any other like kind of highlights that just are kind of your operating principles?
Yeah, there's some what I call keys to building broad participation in a community. And I think there's five or six of those. The first one is just to have fun, right? Yeah. Too often times we make our community work drudgery. And if we look like we're having fun, who's going to want to join us, right? And it's a lot of meetings and Robert's rules. And that's not what gets people engaged. What gets people engaged is things that are fun or where people can actually see results. Very few meetings have results, where they can actually just build a project, build a community garden together, you know, support one another. So that's the first one, just have fun. The second one is, and there's several levels to this, is to start where people are. And a key principle of that is the closer you involve people to where they live, the more likely they are to get engaged. You're probably going to get more people out for a high river wide event than you would on a particular street, but you're never going to get as high a percentage of participation than if you involve people right on the street where they live. Because if it's, you know, high river wide, people are going to say, hey, I don't need to show up because the usual suspects will be there, right? And but if it's on your street, who's going to come if I don't come? And, you know, my neighbor's going to know I'm not there. I'm going to be in trouble. And it's easier because, you know, you don't have to worry about childcare or transportation. And you can see the immediate benefits from your participation. So that's really key, is just starting on your block. A second part of starting where people are is to start with what I call their bumping place. We often call those gathering spaces, but I like to call them bumping places because community is all about building relationships. And you build relationships by bumping into the same people over and over again, right? So if you're going to build community, you need places to bump into other people. And the closer those bumping places are to where you live, the more likely you are to bump into the same people over and over again. So you need that pocket park, you need the community garden, you need the basketball court, you need the coffee shop, you need the pub, you need all those places where people can congregate. And what I found over time is that while people congregate, they tend to congregate with people who are like themselves. Young people tend to hang out with young people, and you know, people with different ethnic groups often hang out with their own group, or people with conservatives hang out with one group and liberals with another. So I'm really all about trying to figure out who are we missing out on and where do they hang out? Where's their bumping place? And how can we connect with them where they're at rather than always trying to get them to come to us? A third part of starting where people are is to start with their network. So oftentimes we're trying to recruit people to our group. And we wonder why people aren't getting engaged. And we forget that just about everybody is already organized. They just don't belong to our group. There are hundreds of different groups, formal and informal, in every town, in every neighborhood. There's faith-based groups. There are youth groups. There's senior groups. There's history groups. There's arts groups. There's crime prevention groups. There's disaster preparedness groups. There's hobby groups. There's art groups. There are hundreds of book clubs, babysitting cooperatives, and people only have so much time. They don't have time to join yet another network. So again, if you want to get people engaged, you need to figure out who's underrepresented in our work and what network are they a part of, and connect with that group and find common interests and start working together. A fourth part of starting where people are is to start with their language and culture. Oftentimes, when I was doing community organizing, I was in a very diverse neighborhood. So I was really clear, I often needed an interpreter so people could understand what I was talking about. But even if everybody in the neighborhood is speaking English, we need to speak the same English that they're speaking. And oftentimes we use our really fancy community building language, like asset-based community development, to mean something really simple, which is just build on your strengths. And if we use language people don't understand, they don't think they know enough to get involved, or they don't know what we're talking about. And to start with their culture, right? When I was organizing, we had a large Jewish community in our neighborhood, and I couldn't figure out for the longest time why they weren't coming to our annual meetings on Saturday versus their holy day. So just, starting with their with where they're at. So I second rule. The third one is strive for results. People feel so powerless these days. What difference can I make? What's the use? And so it's really important, and particularly if they're working like with local government, it just wears them down. There's so many public hearings and task forces, and people don't see any connection between their engagement and results. Lots of surveys, lots of questions, lots of hearings, but nothing happens. So I like to think about, you need to think big, but start small. And just on the block level, start with small winnable issues. Don't start with climate change. Don't start with, start with things where people can actually see results. It doesn't mean we shouldn't work on those big issues, but people are never going to work on the big things if they don't think they even have power to make change on their own street. So whether it's working on an issue or whether it's just a project, small project, so people can actually see that they're getting some results from their participation. That's really crucial. A fourth one is to focus on their passions. So oftentimes we lead with what we're passionate about or what we got a grant to be passionate about. And then when nobody joins us, we say, boy, people are apathetic, right? Nobody's apathetic. Everybody cares deeply about something. So it's much better to start with a question than with an answer. What are your dreams? What would you like to see happen? What are your fears? If you can tap into what people care most deeply about, give them a sense they can do something about it, they're much more likely to get involved than you spend a lot of time trying to convince them to care about what you care about. And then probably the most important one is to focus on their gifts and recognize everybody, absolutely everybody, has something to contribute to the community. But we've often forgotten about that, because we put labels on a good share of our community where we have labeled people not by the gifts that everybody has, but rather by their deficiencies, what they're missing. We use terms like disabled, homeless, non-English speaking, at-risk youth, old people, on and on and on, single parent. Just goes on and on, defining people not by their strengths, but by their limitations. And when we just focus on what people are missing, they become clients in a service system. We focus on people's gifts and everybody's got them. That's the basis for community, because community is all about sharing our gifts with one another, recognizing no one person has everything, has all the gifts we need to build community, but collectively, we have everything we need. Right? But somehow in our society, we've created one class of needy people and then one class of the gifted people. And then we wonder why those people we've labeled by their needs don't get involved in our communities, because we have defined them out of community. We've defined them as clients rather than as citizens. And we need to recognize that every one of us has needs. And every one of us has gifts. And community is all about meeting each other's needs with each other's gifts. It's about mutual support, right? So it's really important to listen for those gifts. You know, gifts of the head, they're knowledge. And gifts of the heart, they're passions. And gifts of the hands, they're skills. Everybody's got them. And we need everybody's gifts if we're going to build community. So those are sort of the key principles I follow in my work.
Yeah, I think that's like on a nice bread and butter. We're like, preach. Now, my curiosity, and maybe you're still in the process of, because I think we're all kind of in the process of figuring out, what does community look like now? Now that we're in the middle of this pandemic, now that we have these interesting divides that have happened, and I think you've probably experienced them maybe even on a totally different level in the States as opposed to Canada, but I think we see this divide. We see, you know, we were told to tell on our neighbors if we saw them doing something that was breaking the rules, or we became our own labels of maskers versus anti-maskers, or vaccinators versus anti. Like, how do we build community right now when there's so much opposition?
I think that wasn't a result of COVID. I think that just brought out divisions that were already there. And I think that's been helpful to bring those out, because we have huge divisions, particularly in the States, huge political divisions, huge cultural divisions, racial divisions. And COVID has really highlighted all those divisions. And it's part of why I'm so passionate about building inclusive community. That community in itself isn't necessarily a good. Community is only good if it brings diverse people together. Because otherwise, you can have a community of white racists. Right? We call Nazis. You know, community is only good if it brings different people together. And that's part of why I'm passionate about local communities, about neighborhoods, because that's the only kind of community that brings diverse people, that has the potential to bring diverse people together. Every other kind of community is one kind of people, people defined by a particular interest, or people defined by a particular identity, whether that's politics or religion or ethnicity, all those things that divide us. It's in our neighborhoods that we get people with different politics, different incomes, different races, different sexes, different ages. And so the challenge is, and yet that we seldom see that diversity reflected in our associations, in our networks, which is why it's so important to identify the bumping places where other people hang out, to identify the networks where other people hang out, and always looking for how do we build more diverse, inclusive community. So that's a response to the question about the divisions. But in response to the question about COVID, I think COVID has been an incredible opportunity for community building. I always say that every crisis presents incredible opportunity. And there's been so much opportunity lately with COVID, with climate change, with racism. And I'm heartened by the way people are stepping up. And I'm heartened that people are rediscovering their neighborhoods, because people can't go to work, because people can't go to school. They're in their neighborhoods. They're confined to their neighborhoods. And so they're starting to connect like they've never connected before. They can't always do it in person, although I think you can. You can do it with masks on outside, and we're doing a lot of that. But I've never been more connected with my neighbors than I am right now. And COVID, as every crisis, is, you know, High River, when you had that flooding, you saw how people came together to support each other. People are at the best, oftentimes, during a crisis. How people stepped up. Mutual aid associations got formed all over this world, where neighbors came together to figure out who needs help getting groceries, Who needs help getting toilet paper? Who needs help, getting to the doctor? And it was neighbors who knew who needed help. It wasn't the agencies. It was people who knew their neighbors and went and helped their neighbors. We just had, where I live, I just feel so blessed the way people have come together. People came together to make masks for everybody on the island that they sewed themselves. Volunteers sewed them and gave them out for free to everybody on the island. Thousands and thousands of masks. People started up little free pantries. In my old neighborhood in Seattle, there was a woman who had a little free pantry for 7 years. And she realized, there's a lot more people who need food now with the pandemic. So she put out a notice on social media, and she said, if you're willing to have a little free pantry in your yard, I will make one for you. Just let me know. She got 26 requests.
Wow.
Fortunately, her neighbors stepped up and helped her build these, and people also contributed money. But now they have built 150 little free pantries all around the neighborhoods around Columbia City. Just story after story. Here on Vashon, we have 200 neighborhood support groups where people are looking out for each other and supporting each other with COVID. We have an all-volunteer group. We had volunteers who figured out how to do testing on the island because we didn't have the medical personnel. We didn't have the fancy equipment. So they figured out how to do a really low-tech test. And that became a model now that's being used on Native American reservations. It's being used in small towns all over the world. But it was volunteers, neighbors who came together to put that together. We have testing stations now that are all run by volunteers. People put together a fund to support people for rental assistance, to help people stay in their homes. Volunteers come together and cook meals, and we get those out to neighbors all over the island. Artists stepped up and created a big mask for the front of a van. They created gigantic figures at the ferry stop with masks to try to make sure visitors to Vashon wore their masks. They had this gigantic swab and had people dressed in medical outfits right in the middle of town, encouraging everybody to get tested. Just all kinds of stuff. We have regular parades in the town. So we still need entertainment. So we figured out how to do a parade that went all around the island. So we took the parade to the people rather than having people congregate in a huge group down in the town center. We've done that several times now. We just had a big inaugural day parade on Vashon. Cars just drove all over the island and people were in the front yards and waving their flags. So people have been incredibly creative. All kinds of online performances. We have lots of artists, and they're always doing workshops and concerts online. So I'm hearing more local music than I've ever heard. It's been, it's amazing how people have stepped up. And I think COVID also woke people up to the issues of climate change. All of a sudden, the skies got quieter. We didn't have the planes flying over anymore. Fewer cars on the road. People started to think, hey, maybe this isn't so bad. People started rediscovering nature. There's more people doing bird watching now than ever before. People out taking walks, and getting reconnected with nature. And then the whole George Floyd killing happened. And I think that COVID woke people up to issues of social justice because they recognized that there was a huge disproportionate deaths among people of color in the United States. Huge difference. And that the people we call the essential workers, our grocery workers, the delivery trucks, are getting really terrible wages. They aren't even making enough to live in the communities where they're working. That woke us up. We started recognizing how valuable these individuals were. So it really galvanized people. We had huge demonstrations right here on Vashon Island. We have portraits in all of our businesses of the Black individuals who were killed by police, 25 of those in all of our storefronts to keep that visible in front of everybody. So COVID's been a struggle. I miss that personal contact. As I said, I hate doing these Zooms, and I can't wait to get back out there. But there's a real silver lining, and I think people have rediscovered community. I think they've started to rediscover that it's not all about we aren't out there buying stuff. We can't go. We can't spend our free time shopping. right? So people are using their time to connect with nature, to connect with neighbors, and starting to realize that's where I really get joy. I don't get joy in getting more stuff. I get joy in the relationships. So I think people rediscovering their neighborhoods, they're rediscovering community. Sorry, that was really long, but I'm passionate about this.
No, see, that's the thing, though, about your passion about what you do and what's so great when you share it is because I think that even we've talked, Tawana and I've had a few conversations on the show talking about people who are getting fatigued during this process. And listening to you go through that list of some examples reminds me that there's so many good things. And it makes me feel excited again. And it makes me feel ready to tackle something again instead of just feeling tired.
Yeah. It's a challenge. It's kind of fun to think, what can we do? How can we kick COVID in the butt? You know, it's like, don't let it get the best of us. We had this guy in Ballard, in the neighborhood in Seattle. He was practicing his bass. And it was a beautiful summer day. So he went outside to practice. And the neighbors started gathering around to listen to him because they were starved for entertainment. And he realized, you know, I really suck at playing the bass. What I'm really good at is opera. So he started singing opera. And the neighbors just loved it. He came back from a store the next day, and all the neighbors were sitting around waiting for him. And they said, you're going to perform again, aren't you? He's been doing it now every day. Every day he's out there singing opera. And there's just examples like that everywhere. People finding ways to come together and support each other with whatever gifts they have.
I love it, Jim. It's just like you get that mindset and you just apply it to everything, right? It's
that
strength base. Or what's the opportunity? What can we do?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, some of it's getting inspired by what other people have done. And there's been a lot of, that's been a nice thing about, as much as I hate the internet and all that, pick up ideas from that, right? People are doing interesting things all around the world that could be replicated in our own neighborhoods. You know, in Italy, they were doing all the banging of the pots, so we started doing that. So people pick up new ideas, but they also come up with their own, you know? We got one neighborhood that comes together every week for bubbles and bubbly. And they're drinking and they're also blowing bubbles. And the other part is buses. So the bus route comes through there. And when the bus comes, they offer drinks to the people on board. They blow bubbles. But they just have a great time. They do that every week. That's their thing.
Okay, I want to bring that one to our neighborhood. I'm in. I think it's great. Well, and I think that we could probably talk to you for hours on end about it. You know, you get three people who are passionate about community. We could go on and on. We will be stewards of your time tonight, Jim, and hopefully we'll have you back and we can have more conversations with this in the future. But thank you for, I think that your gift in sharing is one of many that you have. And I hope people will take away from this is like, maybe we still have a long road to go. Let's make it a freaking fun one.
Yeah. Well, I think the one other opportunity we have is with local government. A lot of local governments, I don't know what the situation is like in Canada, but here they're really facing huge budget issues because of declining revenues because of COVID and also the expense of addressing COVID. So they're huge budget cuts. And I think now's the time for them to wake up and realize that where they need to invest is in community. That's where the resources are, and that COVID's really taught us that. We've seen how many gifts came out of our community to respond to. I tell you, we have the best COVID response rate in the county here on Vashon Island because of community. We don't even have a local government. You know, people just came together to support each other, and we have the best response. And just think if government tapped that for everything else. You know, just and realize that the community isn't just customers, but community is an incredible resource, an incredible partner that could really help government be so much more effective. Sorry, yeah, I just had to get that one in.
I want everybody to hit rewind and listen to him say that again. And then I want you to take this show and send it to all your members of government. You have to rewind that piece one more time.
Well, Alberta's been one of the leaders. You know, there's a lot of cities now that are doing that Abundant Communities initiative and training people how to be block connectors So, you know, this started in Edmonton. It's happening in a lot of towns around Alberta. I think it's a great idea. And it just, you know, really, I think it's a great investment, great return for local government, and a huge benefit to communities.
Absolutely. Well, anything else you want to add, Quanah?
No, I do think, Jim, I am with you, Jody. I'm reinvigorated. It's kind of like, what can I do? And just making it as simple as the, I think what's sticking with me is the, just our meeting our needs with the gifts of the community and just trusting. I've often thought that, I think, you know, especially here where Jody and I live, all the pieces of the puzzle are here. It's just putting them all together. So thank you. Thanks for sharing that and for all the work that you've done, because it's funny how it's just a little quick reminder. It's like, oh yeah, right. A lot of stuff has happened. And I do think COVID has been a highlighter, and you can highlight the bad stuff or you can highlight the good stuff.
Yeah, and I think what you do with your podcast helps a lot, because one of the things I forgot to mention is I think stories are a key piece of building community. And to capture those stories, and I know there's a lot of great stories in High River, and to just get those stories out to kind of remind people about the capacity of the community and to also give people ideas about what they might do themselves, right? The stories are probably the most powerful tool there is to build community. But so oftentimes people do these cool things. They don't want to brag about it. They just, you know, it never gets in the papers. And the real power of what they've done is the story, because then it starts replicating.
Oh, Jim, I think you gave us our call to action. So whoever's listening to this, we want your stories. What's your stories of connection?
100%. That's all we're talking about now. So message us, and we'd love to share those stories. But Jim, thank you so much for spending this time with us. Again, I said, if we don't stop ourselves now, we'll go for hours and hours on end. But if people would like to learn some more about some of the things that you're up to and see some of the cool stories, Jim's website is called neighborpower.org, and you can go and creep them on there.
Just realize that in the United States, we misspell neighbor.
Yes.
There's no you.
There's no our. Right?
How can you have a neighbor without you?
Yeah, I don't know, but you do it all the time. So thank you again for sharing with us, and honestly, like reigniting the excitement that we can do in community.
Okay, party on.